Feet in the water.
Fayette is fortunate to have a local FM radio station, KPIP, which is the flagship program of a nonprofit organization, International Educational Resources for Rural Missouri, or IERRM, whose mission is to cultivate and nurture community educational radio in and around Fayette. In addition to offering content developed elsewhere, KPIP is proud to feature local programming and look to area residents to offer their perspectives on topics of interest to them and their friends and neighbors. The following programming does just this, as it engages local citizenry who are the experts on the area's history because they have lived it. This series is called Howard County Remembers and builds on work done when the county celebrated its 200th birthday in 2016. That year, a fine publication entitled Howard County, Missouri, From Prairie Land to Promised Land, A Remembrance Across Two Centuries, was released. This radio series embellishes on the extensive information contained in that book, which may be found at the Howard County Public Library. To back up, though, the genesis of these programs was inspired by this year's celebration of the state's bicentennial. While Howard County was organized by an act of the General Assembly of the Territory of Missouri in 1816, it was followed 5 years later in 1821, when Missouri was recognized as a state by the United States Congress, making 2021 Missouri's bicentennial year. We decided to tie together these two historically close occasions by focusing on aspects of Howard County's history and keep these in KPIP archives, as well as offer audios of the broadcast to the State of Missouri Historical Society to keep in its archives. You're listening to 94.7 KPIP-LP Fayette, Missouri's educational community radio station. Today, you'll be listening to the 12th and final episode in the Howard County Remembers radio series, which has highlighted aspects of Howard County's history and was developed to celebrate 2021, Missouri's bicentennial year. Today's program is called The African American Experience in Hilldale, a Peaceable Community. Jane Krigler, project coordinator of the Howard County Remembers Radio Project, leads off by talking briefly about how special the Hilldale community was and why it's so important to document its story. You will then hear from three area residents who spent part of their childhood in Hilldale and were descended from some of the early African American settlers there. Well known in Fayette, these individuals are Donald Hill, Fonda McQuitty, and Mike Jackman, who will reminisce about fond memories of that era.
Wade in the water.
Hello, this is Jane Krigler. Thank you for listening to today's program. You should find it uplifting and informative as Donald Hill, Fonda McQuitty, and Mike Jackman share memories of their early lives in Hilldale. Before they begin, though, I wanted to explain what it is about Hilldale that attracted me to try to learn more about it. While I had lived in Fayette as a teenager and returned as an adult to visit my parents many times, I didn't know anything about Hilldale until I bought a home here 8 or 9 years ago and attended a program Kathy Monckton gave to a group here about going to a one-room schoolhouse in the Hilldale area. It sounded like an idyllic place, one where blacks and whites lived in proximity and worked together to build their lives. She told us that the church that served the black community and a very well-maintained black cemetery are still there. Subsequently, I visited the area several times and started talking to individuals, black and white, who knew something about Hilldale. The more I learned, the more I came to believe it was an extraordinary community where interactions between the blacks and whites were quite hospitable and supportive. In an effort to learn more about the African American community there, I looked at the United States Census registers for 1870, soon after slaves were emancipated in 1865, and then for 1940, when some folks who are still living actually lived there. The 1870 census listed 396 families who lived in Montauk Township, where Hilldale is located. Of these, 161 households had people who were black in them, but remarkably, of the 161, 105 consisted of completely separate black families. The other 56 black families were in households with a combination of people who were white and black. In these, the blacks were listed as domestic servants or farm laborers. Also in the census listing, the black families seemed to be clustered together geographically in a community of their making after emancipation, which communities are now referred to by many as freedmen's communities. Our guests today will fill in much of the rest of the story, but there are still questions I hope to answer with the help of others going forward. But now let's listen to Donald, Fonda, and Mike. I want to welcome the three of you and thank you for your willingness to share your memories of Hilldale. Let's start with Donald.
Well, Jane, my folks was raised in Hilldale vicinity during the time when I was, before I believe I was born. I was born in 1949 and was born at Shenai Todd's farm, that's south of Fayette, Missouri. So during that time, my mother and my mother's name was Minnie Hill, my grandfather was named Tom Hill, and they had 10 kids at that time. Now, they had a school there behind the cemetery. The school was in front, the cemetery was behind. Then they had the church, the Hilldale Church was there. Also, the school grade was from the first grade to the eighth grade. That's far as they went. And I remember my uncle, J.D. Hill, was telling us that he used to ride a horse, it was 10 miles, and he used to ride behind this lady, and she let him ride the horse to go to school, you know. And my grandmother, she used to walk from Shenandoah Farm, her and the name lady named Margaret Ray, used to walk across the fields in the dark to that church, and they had to build fires in the church. They had the old wooden stove, so they had to build fires in that. And they had a teacher. First, they played outside, just like recess that they did at school when I went to school here. We left the farm when I became 6 years old and moved to Fayette, Missouri. My grandmother, my grandfather, we came, and Mama came in a horse and wagon and moved to town on 22 East Marston Street here in Fayette, Missouri. And my mother moved on a place right across from the factory. It used to be the fire ground here in Fayette, Missouri. And I went to school at Lincoln School. And we used to come back. My Uncle J.D. moved to Detroit, Michigan. He come back home every year in August. And we have a basket dinner down the hill there. It was always in August, the first week in August. And my grandmother would go, and everybody in the community raised there. So you had the Hills, the Rays, the Eubankses, McKees, the Robins, the Barnetts. They all lived in that community, the Burses, the Stemmons. So they lived in that community during that time.
Now, didn't you tell me who the first African-American settler there, Eubanks?
Yeah, it was John Henry Eubanks, and Jane was his wife. So they was the first one that came from Kentucky and moved to Hilldale.
Do you know what attracted them or why they chose to live there?
You know, I believe that was during the slavery time when they did that, you know, reason why they settled there in Hilldale, Missouri, a black community. They had both farms. A guy named Jim McKee, he had a farm down there. He had hogs, he had cattle, and he had crops.
Was he black or white?
He was black.
Okay.
Yeah, he was the brother to the other McKees, Ayla McKee, stuff like that, you know, Roosevelt McKee.
Well, we'll come back to you. Fonda, why don't you pick it up from there and tell us about your forebears?
Well, my dad, Dallas Jackman, was my dad, and Lily Irvin Jackman, but she was from Independence, Missouri, and so she came to Missouri after she met my dad, Dallas. He was kind of down from Hillsdale, him and some of his brothers, Willis, Donald, and Robert Jackman. Mike's father was Willis. But I can remember when I was about 12, I went to enjoy going to hayfield with my parents. My dad had his own truck, and he hauled hay for many people out there in the hills, the area, like Clarence Hammond, Archie Hill, just quite a few of them, like Cecil Williams. Because I remember Cecil Williams, his wife, they had a sow that had pigs. And my mom kept saying, please don't go over and, you know, into the pen without a club or some kind of weapon, because she's kind of mean. She had the pigs. Well, she never listened. And she went over anyway. And then the sow just chewed her up, knocked her down and chewed her up. And when he came, he found her deceased in the hog pen. But he... I went. I just never had to go to Hall Hay with them, but I thought it was just something fun. And back then, the bales of hay was just kind of a little small, narrow, and they were lighter, so I could lift them and help put them up on the truck. Sometime I would try to drive the truck since there wasn't a lot of traffic, anything, you know, it's just a straightaway hay field. So they said, well, get in, you can drive the truck. So I would drive the truck for the men, and they would put the hay on the hay truck. But anyway, it was just a nice day. And I remember back when it was just kind of not a lot of whites out in there. I mean, it was whites, but, you know, it was some nice one. Miss Archie Hill, she was awful nice. She always had my dad and my mom to come sit down at her table for lunch and eat with them. You know, they wasn't prejudiced at all and everything. And then it used to be, who was it, Donald Mike, the people that used to have the great big kettles. They did molasses.
Yeah,
molasses. They made molasses, and they just kind of served molasses around to neighbors and everything, a great big, the black kettles, and it was really good out of the molasses. I don't know what all they used. What did they use? Just
well, they did hogs, too, during that time
too.
Yeah, the scald hogs and that. And also, they did a lot of fruit and stuff like that out in the yard. They build a fire underneath there, and you did your blackberries, your raspberries, your fruit, your jelly, stuff like that out in the yard, and made preserves.
But I never went to school there. I went to the Lincoln School down on East Hackberry.
Well, let's move here to Mike.
Elaborate a little bit more on what Donald was saying. As Fonda said, my dad was Willis, better known probably as Pee Wee. I was born in 57. I was born in Lee Hospital, so I never went to school. The Union had been closed by that time.
Oh, yes.
But like Fonda, I went to Lincoln on East Hackberry. But I remember going down, and Memorial Weekend was a big weekend, of course, to go decorate the graves. I remember the basket dinners. The place would be full. And
yes.
Me and someone talked about that the other day. Nobody had ever get sick because it was hot weather.
Mm-hmm.
Watermelon,
yeah.
Country ham, mm-hmm. fried chicken, regular ham.
Yeah.
So much, you couldn't eat it all you wanted to, but it was a great time. On my dad's mother's side, the Robinson, Mamie's sister Effie and her older sister Dorothy, who are both deceased now, I think they went and done some research. It'd be my great-great-great-grandfather was brought here in the early 1800s. His name was James Robinson. He married Mary, but his owner was a guy by the name of Mark Robinson. And Maine Lily showed me a picture of Mark Robinson. I don't know, it wasn't hers. She just showed it to me one day, but they were brought here from Kentucky as slaves in the early 1800s. And James had a son, if my memory serves me correctly, named Barry Robinson. I think Barry was born in 1826. He became a minister. And his son was Willis Robinson, who was my dad, the name after my dad's grandfather. We have a picture of Willis Robinson. He's on looked like a mule with kind of like a gunny sack on. From what I understand, he was a tall man. He loved his family dearly, and in fact, he took care of his brothers and other siblings because I think his parents had died early. But back to my dad, he only had an 8th-grade education from a significant large family. It was three brothers and one sister. But since their dad died at such an early age, my dad was forced, was actually made to work in the fields. The story about him goes, make a long story short, there's a vehicle out there that was having problems, I think wiper problems, and they called Dr. John Kemp. And he said, I love this story. Find there's a little colored boy, I understand, after my name of PBC, if you can find him. Well, they found him, and he fixed it, and John Kemp went the next day to pay him. And he was shocked that my dad wasn't in school, and his mom said he's got to work to help support the family. You know, he can't, there's no way he's going to go to school. So he only had an 8th-grade education. But I think the thing that I remember most is like going to the cemetery, Memorial Weekend. It was a big weekend with a lot of people that had moved away, a lot of blacks that had moved away, simply came back to decorate the graves in like the first week in August. It was a really big family thing back in those days.
Well, what was the income working for other people? Did they have cash crops?
I think maybe some of the McKees. And maybe Eubanks were kind of like sharecropping, but my dad, I know he said his mom and family, they would often live somewhere, and then maybe sometime during the year or the next year, they would move somewhere else because somebody else, another white farmer would say, hey, look, you and your son's family, come with me, come and work for me, we'll give you half a hog, we'll give you a hog, and you and your boys work for us, and my dad, so they would pick mm-hmm. up, leaving with good understanding, they would pick up, and so they moved around till times got better. And of course, as history shows, you know, when some of those young men went to war and came back, hey, there's a better way of living than living like this. So my dad said, including himself, that's why a lot of those young men joined the military, to get away from, he said, get away from that horse and plow, mm-hmm. and said, hey, look, we can live better than this. And then
yes.
they started migrating to Columbia, Fayette, Kansas City, or Detroit, where they had connections, mm-hmm. where an older brother, somebody would say, look, you come stay with me, we can help each other out, make a better living. And so they migrated away from the farming. If I'm memory serves me again correct, I think Mr. George Stimmons probably was the last black farmer.
Yeah, George H. Stimmons.
Yeah, he's the last one.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Well, in terms of the whites and blacks, they lived next to each other, or were the blacks in a particular community?
No. But blacks is a different community. The Keys, the Robbins, and the Stimmons lived in different, because Lake McQuitty, you know, and Jim McKee, them had farmed back to back. Mm-hmm.
So they owned the land?
Yes. Uh-huh. Oh, yes. Yes. Uh-huh.
Well, one thing I've been trying to figure out, they call these communities, and there was one up around Roachport, and then Pennytown up by near Marshall, mm-hmm. they were called freedmen's hamlets or freedmen's communities, mm-hmm. where the blacks, after they were emancipated, right. came to have their own farms and their own income and not be beholden to the white owner or boss or whatever he was then. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if that exactly applies. Were the blacks living in a community as such?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes, they lived in the community, vicinity, in that, around that church and that school, yes.
When they were emancipated, they oftentimes stayed with their former owner.
Right,
family.
Because they had no money.
They had no money.
What they did back in those days, it was a sharecrop, mm-hmm. you know, and the owner of the property gave the blacks an opportunity to work for them. They worked for them, they owned them. They were slaves, so they owned them. So they had no money. The only thing they had to do is come into the store and they give a right of a slip. They get shoes and stuff like that. And you never been able to pay this owner off. And when the emancipation came in and their freedom, they had no money, no land, no equipment. It all belonged to the white man. So they had no place to go. So they stayed there and made the best of it they could. And when they raised the kids left there and went to like Chicago and different places like California, you know, to get away from the home, like Detroit. They went from the north, you know, yeah, because all this stuff happened in the south.
Right.
So they went north.
Well, were the whites, for example, raising hemp and tobacco and the things like in Arrow Rock, taking them to the river to send to market?
They did that in Glasgow, Missouri, at the river.
But
they sold a lot of black
stuff,
but not in Fayette, because that happened in Glasgow, the tobacco stuff like that. And they brought slaves down at the river there, and they sold them on the block there. Slaves, stuff like that.
So when the blacks started getting proper their own farms,
yes,
it was they saved their money from the work.
From
crops.
Yes, uh-huh. And that's why the kids, you know, the kids stayed out of school and they started working and helped their parents, you know, and build this up, and they sold these crops and stuff like that. Yeah.
Okay. And the schools, the Union School is not the Union School that you find there now.
No. Our school is a black community named Hilldale Union School.
Okay.
I think it got tore down, in the 60s or 70s? I remember. It was, you know, off limits for us to go inside and play, but it was still standing there.
It had to be in the 60s because of the Lakers school, you know,
right.
And everybody moved out of that vicinity. You know, they had two things. They went to Dalton, they transferred them to Dalton School.
To finish school, yes.
And also they went to Boonville, to that school there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to finish the grade. First they could go, is like you said, and here in Fayette, Missouri itself, during that time, Bobby George and them, and the gangs and everybody, when they graduated from Fayette High School, we only do from the 10th grade, from the 1st to the 10th. And they went to, like I say, they went to Dalton. Wallace Bentley transferred from Dalton, from Fayette to Dalton. And also some of them lived in a close community. Out from Hillsdale, they went to Boonville.
Mm-hmm. Finished.
Yeah.
12th grade.
Finished in 12th, 10th from the 2 years.
Uh-huh. What'd you do for fun down there, Fonda?
At Hillsdale?
Yeah.
Oh, not a whole lot, because I didn't go a lot, like I say, just doing the hay and all and visiting. But what I always enjoyed, Kate and Dick Little had a little store.
About that.
Yes, and Dick.
Where was it?
It was just south before you get to Hillsdale. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, way before you get to Hillsdale.
Yeah, way, it's pretty far.
Where the Watts is at, you know, around on that corner.
Yeah, the curve.
Get a Watts and go right up the hill on top of that.
Right.
Dick and Charlie Little.
Charlie Little.
Hank and I used to go over, and Mike Eubank used to go over all the time because they live right down the road.
You can walk up there?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And did the Whites also patronize the store?
Yes, uh-huh. Oh, yeah, everybody in that community. Because they sold lunch meat, cheese, and crackers and stuff like that. And they cut them on. He was a little short, bald-head guy, a little wore-rimmed glasses. Kate was a little small lady. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Everybody knew them.
And you said for a nickel you could get them.
You could. For a nickel, you might get two slices of lunch meat and maybe a slice or two of cheese. And then they added crackers. Yes.
Yeah.
Nickel or dime. I remember.
Yeah.
I was 12 or 13, but I remember then. They were nice people, though.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Mamie Carter, who wasn't able to join us today, but she said that after she graduated from high school, she got a driver's license, and she and Mrs. Little hired her to go drive her to Boonville or wherever to get supplies.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And they did that for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, one thing I want to ask you about, it seems to me, talking to people like Kathy Monckton, who went to...
George Monckton. Yeah, married her.
Yeah. And she did a program for us on one-room school, going to her one-room school, Drake. But talking to her and others, it sounds like that community was a very peaceable...
Yes.
There wasn't all this friction between the blacks and whites.
No.
Oh, no.
Was to me that Hilldale a peaceable community, and the African featuring the African American experience there.
It also could be a community that worked together.
Yeah.
And brought families together. They worked for the family to have a better education than what they did. So it was community like a fellowship and helping each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it was about. It was connection that helped each other. You know, you cut wood and you did hogs and kill it at the same time. You know, if you need a plow, if you need a mule or a horse to help you do the plow rope, this and that, it was sharing was what you had.
Because I was mentioning this to somebody who knew about communities up south of Higby. He said it wasn't like that up there. There was a lot of
friction.
Yeah.
So I think there's a unique story here about Hilldale. Mm-hmm. But now, do you call it Hillsdale or Hilldale?
Hilldale, H-I-L-L.
But no, I thought it was an S in it.
Yeah, it is.
H-I-L-L-S-D-A-L-E.
Yeah, there it is.
Well, that's because some of it has without the S.
I think it's just pronunciation. It's
like
Missouri.
Oh,
Missouri,
and I did also find out there was a post office there from 1894 to 1910.
Post office where?
There in Hilldale. Yeah, for just until 1910.
Oh.
Do you know where it was located at?
I don't. I thought maybe one of you all. Because I haven't. What's that long building there used for?
Just a trailer. What we did once the school tore down. So what they did is had food in that trailer. Before then, we had it outside. What you do, you bring chairs and table, and it was always set outside.
They had a lot of basket dinners at
every year.
The trailer, every year.
And the whites and the blacks, they didn't do these social events together.
No, No, it was just for the people that accepted, the black people that lived in their community. Yeah.
Kind of like a homecoming celebration.
Yeah, it was, homecoming.
Well, what else, anything else you can tell me about that little town? Where'd you go to do your more major shopping, or did you?
No, you didn't come to see. What did that? You didn't come to town for once a week. And grandma, if you run out of food, grandma, I remember grandma told my grandfather, Tom Hill, said, Tom said, we run out of this. It might be on the Wednesday. He said, by God, many, you have to suck your thumbs until Saturday. So you didn't come to town for once a week. Yeah. And I remember Mama was telling me during the time when it's a ration or something was going on, your sugar and stuff like that, coffee and meat, and they used to get horse meat. you know, because they had a ration on food during that time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you meet up here to, by Tempest Steve in the corner, you know, where Krigler used to sell stuff at.
Yeah.
That's where they came to town there. And I think they tied their horses and stuff down there about doing that lot right along there. Because I remember Mike Landers had a barn and shed down there, yeah, right across from St. Paul Church.
Okay, well, anything else for the good of the order? Fond memories of some kind? Or
only thing I remember, like, the fond memories, Uncle J.D. used to come home every year, like in August, and Grandma stuff, we'd go down the hill there, and basically then you'd play and see all the kids, you'd play out in the yard, you'd sack races, stuff like that, you know, run. It was just the freedom that you had, you know. The parents, they put these big tables out, and they have kids standing there and fan. You get ice and chopped ice and put over the big tubs and stuff like that. Put your watermelon in, they make a lot of lemonade, stuff like that. Yeah, good chicken. Ooh!
Yeah. And the school, was it like a one-room school?
One room, yes. Uh-huh.
So what grades, 1 through 8?
Yes.
We're all together,
yes,
with one teacher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
There's he probably knows a Reverend Dewey Eubanks, who's a good friend of mine. He lives in Ypsilanti, Michigan now, but he said upstairs at the school is a lodge.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But as I said, this in the 6th, we went down, the school's already closed. And
this is the lodge that you was talking about.
Oh, okay.
Is this a Mason's?
Yeah.
I had that on my thing to ask you. So you had a Mason's lodge.
Yeah, my grandmother, when she was 29 years old, tell you the names and everything right on that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting.
Minnie Hill and Tom Hill, mm-hmm, and named all the kids.
Well, these...
It tells you what year it is, too.
Uh-huh.
What year is that?
Yeah, 1896. Set it on the back there, gratification. Right there, where you got the thumb.
There was one in Arrow Rock that was, again, in that chapter of the book he wrote. But I think you could write a lot up about Hilldale. Mm-hmm. Hilldale or Hillsdale, whichever it is.
I think while we're sitting here at the back, and Donald probably knows more than I do, the back of the cemetery, this new mower weighs a lot more than I have.
Yeah, but the old part, we knew one part is over 100 years old.
Yeah, and there's some Afro-Americans that were in the Civil War that were buried there.
Yes, Elijah McKee. That's the woman called his father. Ken McKee's father, he was in World War I. The Booth, also Booth, he was in World War I. Uh-huh, yeah.
But you were saying Civil War.
But I think, is anybody know that was in the Civil War that's buried in there? Some
could be
told
in
me
the old part. In the old part, on your part. I had to look at that again. Yeah, their monument is still there. Mm-hmm.
I want to thank you for sharing your memories about Hilldale. This should be interesting to folks, whether they know a little or a lot about the area. Thank you so much.
Well, Jane, thank you for inviting me here at this time, mm-hmm, that I'll be able to participate and give you the information, what I knew and what my parents knew by living there. And I thank you for the opportunity to do this at this time.
It's been
a pleasure.
Yeah, same here. Thank you for having me.
I'd like to mention that in the past, for the cemetery and the yard down there, the churchyard in that area, is maintained, manicured, just immaculate. It's by Donald Hill, Kenneth McKee, David Stemmons, and I think Jesse Bo Williams, and
yes,
my brother. Don Jackman, y'all take their own time to go down and keep it immaculate.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Howard County Remembers on 94.7 KPIP, Howard County's only nonprofit educational community radio station. The episode, entitled The African American Experience in Hilldale, A Peaceable Community, was directed and presented by Jane Krigler, voiced by David Holman, and produced by Rachel Steele. Thank you to Donald Hill, Fonda McQuitty, and Mike Jackman for their moving and informative reminiscences about growing up in Hilldale. Hilldale is located in southeast Howard County near the Boone County line. To reach Hilldale, go south on Highway 240 out of Fayette. Turn left on W at the top of the hill. Continue about 9 miles to County Road 429 and watch for the sign for Mount Woodland AME Church and Hilldale. Go a short distance and the church and cemetery are on the left. This is the final episode of the Howard County Remembers Rivers Radio Broadcasts, KPIP does intend to air the full series of 12 episodes early in 2022. In addition, the station will keep the audio recordings in its archives and send a copy of these to the State Historical Society of Missouri to keep in its archives. Howard County Remembers has been brought to you by the Boonslick Historical Society and endorsed by the State Historical Society of Missouri.
God's gonna trouble.